Fáilte, Roimh, Uilig, Go Léir. You're all very welcome to the latest in Sinn Féin's public meeting series, which you know we initiated as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Little did we know when we held the first of these meetings that we would be holding so many or for so long. And tonight, as we speak to you, we don't know how long arrangements like this are going to have to stay in place. I've already received literally hundreds of queries and messages that we've received through our social media platform. I'm going to be receiving updates as the night goes on. So please send your comments, your questions. We're being honest, we're not going to get to every single one of them, but we will try and come back afterwards. So let us know your concerns. We know that a lot of people are incredibly worried. A lot of people are incredibly frustrated. A lot of people need haircuts. A lot of people have all sorts of little tribulations going on in their lives. And then there's some people that have really big concerns for their loved ones. And we're thinking at times like this of those who've already lost loved ones to this terrible virus and those people who are struggling financially and otherwise. So let us know of your broad concerns. And of course, if you have any specific personal concerns, please contact your local Sinn Féin representative if you think we can help at all. We're all on hand, we're all working, and we have been inundated with people's queries over the past number of weeks. But that's what you elected us to do, and that's what we're here for. So continue to send those on as they come. So tonight, I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to introduce you to you the rest of the panel on this evening's discussion. And coming all the way from beautiful Gweedore in Donegal is our Dáil Deputy Leader and Finance Spokesperson, Piers Doherty. All the way from Killoe in County Tyrone is the Joint First Minister and our Vice President, Michelle O'Neill. Tá fáilte romhaibh, Michelle. And we're absolutely delighted, I have to say, and overwhelmed and overjoyed that we're rejoined by our party president and leader, Mary Lou McDonald, coming all the way this evening from Cabra. Mary Lou, it's fantastic to have you back. We know you've had a busy first day back on the job, but you have what thankfully the rest of us haven't had at this point, but personal real-life experience of the COVID-19 virus. Tell us what it meant in your own personal experience.
Well, thanks very much, Matt, and good evening, everyone. And I can tell you there's nobody happier than me to be on this broadcast this evening. I'm delighted to be back. I did have a very busy day. We're heading into now a whole series of very busy days because there's an awful lot of work to be done. I'm happy to report, Matt, that I'm well. And I feel strong and I feel optimistic and I've finished all of my treatments. I need to be careful that I get enough sleep just for the next couple of weeks, but I'm fighting fit. I consider myself very lucky, to tell you the truth, because I've come through this experience. It was a difficult experience. This is a horrible, horrible virus. I'm assuming that the version of it that I had would be considered to be mild. But just for anybody out there who might be complacent or have a bit of bravado about this because you're younger, because you've good health and you feel you're not at risk, can I just tell you that even the mild version of this is tough and hard going. And I'm just so mindful of anybody who's watching us this evening, Matt, or you know, who's suffering themselves, who has the virus, or who's somebody in their house that has the virus, or worse still, those that have buried their people. I just find it absolutely heartbreaking. And I suppose you asked me the effect on it, of it on me personally. I think the biggest effect was that I had just such a strong sense that this virus had gotten into my house, and a real sense of upset that had been the case. And then also a real sense of connection with anybody else who had this virus also. And a really, really sense of grief, I think, for those that had succumbed to it. In a very strange way, you nearly feel connected with everybody else who's been through the COVID-19 experience. But I am very lucky. I am very well. I am very thankful. And just to say, I am very determined that we need collectively the system right across the island to get this right and to save as many lives and keep as many people well as we can. So to all of our viewers and to people beyond, I just want to say a very big thank you for thousands of messages of support that came to me, and it meant a huge amount to me, but it meant the world to my husband and our kids. So thank you sincerely. Do you know what, Matt? People are great. People are absolutely
and we're getting literally hundreds of messages in again, wishing you all the best. The really, I suppose, brutal reality of this COVID-19 is that it affects so many different people in different ways. So you're talking about the experience you had. We know of people who have come through the virus with almost no symptoms at all. My own area of South Monaghan today, unfortunately, we saw a tragic scene as a young father with young children was laid to rest, a victim to the coronavirus. So it impacts on everybody. And we know one of the ways and the best way of ensuring that people come through this crisis is if they don't contract the virus in the first place. And we know that a really important tool to do that is testing. There was a bit of, commentary about the fact that you are waiting so long yourself. And I know you haven't made this a personal issue, but we need to get the testing right, don't we?
Oh, my God, absolutely. You see, if we don't get the testing right, you're not getting anything else right. And I mean, unlike the government in London, which had this crazy approach all around herd immunity and not testing, almost making a virtue of that. I mean, we pushed back against that in the north because we have understood, I think, island-wide, that the key to dealing with this is to test, to isolate and to trace. So yeah, I was waiting 16 days for the result of my own test. I mean, that's not a good place to be. It's also not acceptable. And I'm not saying this now personally because I'm through my experience, but nobody should be left in that position. I mean, particularly and most shockingly, perhaps, health workers, frontline health workers, have been left waiting as long as I was waiting and longer. We have to get testing right. And look, I'm not saying this to be, you know, for recrimination, because the bottom line here is that we need to keep people safe and save lives. But it can't just be a matter of the system announcing massive figures or targets for testing. The testing needs to happen. The samples need to be taken. They need to be gotten to laboratories very promptly. And then the results need to be reported back as promptly as possible. Because, do you know, one of the biggest problems is, Matt, with a delay in the testing, it's not just that you leave individuals in a kind of limbo, but you undermine all of the contact tracing. And if we, to get this right, all of us know, and Sinn Féin has advocated this from the get-go, test, isolate and trace. And that means placing the right resources in the right places at the right time. And I think everyone tuning in this evening won't be surprised for us to say that now in nursing homes, for example, the testing needs to happen to direct interventions and treatment. But there are other congregated care settings as well for people with additional needs, intellectual disabilities and so on. And we need to get under the bonnet of that quickly, because we need to know what's going on. But you're right, Matt, it's test. And whereas we had the right roadmap and we signed on for that and we want that and insist that goes island-wide, it hasn't worked out on the ground. And I mean, I now know that from very direct personal experience, but that cannot happen. We're told now that the backlog is cleared on the one hand, but I'm also hearing that there are people who are still waiting, Matt, do you know, who got tested in or about the same time as myself, and they still haven't got their results back. I mean, we can't tolerate that. We can't allow that to happen and still imagine that we're going to get ahead of this virus. We're not. We're not going to, unless we get testing right.
And one of the people who's responsible in many respects for ensuring that these things are rolled out is the joint head of government in the executive in the north. Michelle, thanks for joining us again. So I suppose the question people are asking is, are we over this crisis now? Can we start to relax the restrictions? Because they have had a big impact on people's.
Well, firstly, again, thanks to all the viewers that have tuned in to listen to us this evening. And also, I'm delighted to see that Mary Lou's back at the helm and doing well. I think that certainly for us in the north, the situation was that the British government were very slow to act from the outset. And that meant that our people in the north were then nearly left in a position where we were being forced to follow initially anyway. A slavishly had Tory system that was obviously too slow to act, that was out of sync with the World Health Organization. And it left us in a very difficult position. And we spent the last 4 weeks now catching up and actually getting things into a better state. But I think that, we have to always remind ourselves, Matt, about why we're doing the measures that we are, why we're asking people to stay apart. And we know that's very difficult. It is really difficult for people right now, for families to be apart, for people who are living alone and isolating. It's just really, really hard thing to ask people to do, but you always why you're asking people to do it. This is ultimately about saving lives. And today, 90 people across this island lost their battle. 90 families are left bereaved this evening as a result of COVID-19. So that for me demonstrates that we're far from out of the woods, that we still need to keep doing what we're doing. We need to follow the public health advice, and we need to keep pinching ourselves and reminding ourselves, why we're doing this. It is ultimately all about saving lives. So now is not the time to take our foot off the pedal. Now is the time to keep our foot very firmly on the pedal and keep staying apart and keep following that public health message.
So what does that mean, staying, keeping the foot on the pedal in terms of the executive? What's the big initiatives from your perspective over the next number of days?
Well, I'm glad to say that we are now in a position where we're aligned across the island in terms of the measures which we're to do. And we're both in the position where we've said that there will be a review at the start of May. And I think that's, we need to tell people that, we're only going to ask people to do these things for as long as necessary to ask people to do these things. We want to have families united again. We're all dying to give our family, somebody a hug. My mummy's isolating. So I understand as a family how difficult it is for all of us. So I think that we're all desperate to get back to that point again. But I think that for now, people need to just understand that we need to keep doing what we're doing. We're having an impact. We're actually positively influencing and bringing down the curve. And we're bringing down the number of people that are actually, losing their lives to COVID. So let's just keep doing what we're doing for another period of time. It's very, very difficult. I mean, even here, I've heard concern from some people who want to be able to visit graveyards, who want to be able to do certain things. Now is not the time. I understand and have every sympathy for people who want to be able to go and visit a graveyard, but we can't relax those measures at this moment. But there will come a time whenever we're able to move and allow people that comfort again. But for now, we have to just keep doing this, and we have to keep trying to save lives.
Okay, thanks for that, Michelle. Pierce Doherty, one of the things I wanted to touch on with you on though was we're well aware of the huge just sense of solidarity that we're seeing within our communities. We're seeing it in most businesses with employers and employees are coming together to try and save the business and try and come through all of this together. There's a couple of exceptions. We deal with the cases where some employers are forcing their workers to take paid annual leave and other measures like that that are just a little bit petty, I have to say. But probably the one that has really irked people has been the actions of Debenhams. And I just want to read to you a message that came in through the day. And this is from a woman called Lorna, who's asking if we could address the situation with Debenhams shutting its doors, leaving so many Irish workers without work. We are informed by email and then told to contact gov.ie or Citizens Info if we had any questions. This is from a huge corporation. That's it. This happened with Cleary's, but at least they were told to their faces. The government said they wouldn't allow this to happen again. And here we are. We need to protect our retail workers. That's from Lorna. We know that Lorna, or at least some of our colleagues, are going to be demonstrating over the coming days and weeks, but that's clearly unacceptable behaviour on the part of Debenhams.
Absolutely, Matt, and I hope you're keeping well as well, and everybody else who's joined us online. It's absolutely unacceptable behaviour, and there's so many people who are affected at this point in time who have anxiety as a result of just the pandemic and everything that we're facing, and to be many people who've lost their jobs, many people who've been let go temporarily, but to be treated in this way with a company who these employees have been made very successful over many, many years is just simply scandalous. And what we see is history repeating itself. You mentioned there in terms of Cleary's, you mentioned in terms of how some of these larger multinationals are able to exploit and treat the workers in this way. And I know from our part, we have been engaging with all of the relevant individuals and trying to ensure that the workers are treated in a proper way. I know Tommy Gould in particular, and Donna O'Leary and a number of others have been at the forefront of this this issue here. And tomorrow we will be standing very clear that we support the workers of Debenhams, but we don't want to just extend our solidarity, we want action.
Very good. I have two questions, Pearson. I know the line's not great, but if you could just allow me to ask them, and then if we're able to get you across, all the better. So Killian asks a question for this evening. People and businesses need access to cheap lines of credit, he's talking 0%, to get back on their feet, take advantage of pent-up demand, provide reassurances to consumers and workers and families so that they can get the real economy moving. Debt will need to be mutualised. Banks should not profiteer from this emergency. How do you plan to work on making this happen? Gerald asks, what about the workers who cannot avail of the support payments because they reside in the six counties? We know this issue. The tax authorities can acknowledge your address when communicating to you when they're looking for their tax. These people have contributed to the state coffers and should be able to avail of state aid at any stage. We have a number of questions on that line. We also have a number of workers who are over 66 or under 18 who've also been denied support in that line. So in terms of credits and the actions of the banks, because the banks and the insurance companies manage to remind people exactly why they hold the esteem in which they do, or lack of it, among the Irish population with their actions over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, look, it's absolutely crazy. And the penny's beginning to drop with a lot of individuals, including those in government now. For the first time, we forced the Minister for Finance into calling out the banks and saying that the banks shouldn't be profiting. But look, at the end of the day, the Minister for Finance is the shareholder on behalf of the Irish people on AIB, holding 71%. They're going into their AGM in the next couple of weeks, and AIB are profiting on the back of this. They talk about a mortgage break or a loan break, but the reality is the interest still accrues, and people then end up paying more over the period of their loan than they would if they didn't get the break. So that's not acceptable. And when we're talking about more, we're talking about thousands of euros in some regards. So remember, the people who are looking for this break are people who've lost their jobs, who are not working at the minute, some of them have lost it permanently, others have lost it temporarily. They're in a hardship, financial hardship. So therefore, the bank shouldn't be pressurising them and profiting on the back of this. And government really and the central bank need to call this out.
Thanks for that, Pierce. Pierce, your line just isn't great, so I'm just going to move on. I just wanted to go back to an earlier point that Mary Lou, and I won't ask you to come in on this, but it's just to give you an example of the experiences. So a guy called Mike asked us to address how many are still waiting for test results, and he cites his own wife who was tested on the 26th of March. She's a frontline healthcare worker and still hasn't got a result. Rang UCD, they don't have them, and they said it could be in any lab. And he's asking the question, how is this priority testing for frontline healthcare workers? I think you've addressed that, Mary Lou, but I just wanted to mention that. I think just if we could spend a couple of moments, because we've got dozens of messages in relation to the footage that arose from the Keelings workers over the weekend. And Stephen has asked, will Sinn Féin be holding people to account over what are apparent breaches of the formal restrictions that ordinary families are expected to abide by during this pandemic? It was palpable over the weekend, just the anger that people had. I suppose people who've been felt locked up in their own homes and then see these images of, you know, nearly a couple of hundred people getting off flights. You know, these things, you know, do get on people's nerves, quite understandably, Mary Lou.
Oh, Oh, absolutely. And listen, it's entirely natural when you're told that either you're cocooning in your own home or at a maximum you can move within a 2 kilometre zone, that you're very limited. We're all very restricted in our movements and our actions. And collectively, we've signed on for that. And we're facing into that now still for some time ahead. That's the reality. And of course, it's natural that annoyance then is caused, or even I would suggest more than annoyance, fear. Because bear in mind, there's a reason why these restrictions have been applied. The reason why we are living with these restrictions is to slow down the transmission of the virus. So when that happened, when I saw that footage, which was very shocking, at no stage did I interpret people's reaction to that as hostility against workers, hostility against people coming to the island, to Workshire. We know that happens season in and season out. But it was a real reflection of perhaps a bit of that frustration that you've talked about, Matt, but to my way of thinking, more to the point, a real panic that says, well, hold on, we're trying to shut this thing down, we're trying to flatten this curve, stay ahead of things, and now we have hundreds of people arriving from another place. You know, there's been a real deficit. One of the deficits in the government approach so far has been a lack of clear guidance and guidelines about people coming onto the island. And I think we've had a couple of times now where people have seen this and said, hold on, what's this all about? And rightly so, frankly. I think we can all understand for supply of food, of medicines, of personnel who need to come onto the island. We know that needs to happen. Let's accept that. But I think we also now need reassurance from government that they have a coherent set of policies and plans to ensure that we're not allowing, allowing people come onto the island and to become what I think Tony Holohan said, he put it, seeding, you know, another outbreak or more transmission of the disease. I think people should take reassurance from the fact that when asked about these workers, and the decision that had been taken by Keelan, more to the point, the chief medical officer said that he wasn't happy, that he was uneasy, and that he was concerned. And I very much hope that will prompt a quick review that the Taoiseach has looked for, and that we get strong, sensible rules that can reassure all of us that every action is being taken and that we're not insisting on actions from people living on the island and then very, very foolishly perhaps allowing the virus to be imported or to come onto the island through a different means. So in answer to the question, will we be looking for answers on this? Absolutely. I think we need reassurance. The public needs reassurance. And the reassurance needs to be around being sure that we're not leaving an opening for the virus to land and to be transmitted, to make people sick and worse. That's the bottom line.
Mary Lou, while you were off sick, you might have missed a apparent groundbreaking document that was released by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael last week. If somebody had showed it to you in your sick bed, you would have thought you were hallucinating that anybody would have presented this as a realistic proposition for the basis of government. But on government formation, and on a serious note, we've got lots of questions in terms of where things stand now. And I think a good sample of those I'll give you two. So Peter asks, have you given up on forming a government for the people? And Bernie says, how come Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are getting away with trying to form a government excluding Sinn Féin? That's not what we voted for. And it appears that nobody is stopping them. And that's coming through an awful lot. The people are saying, how can we stop these two parties essentially dismissing what was a huge mandate for change back in February? It seems like a long time ago now, but it is only, 2 months so.
So they say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So can I say to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, we're flattered, lads. But we know for sure that this framework document is, I think Pierce just described it as high on spin and low on detail and substance. And I think that's a fair assessment of it. I think it is simply a political maneuver to put pressure on other parties who do actually believe in change and to force them to the table to talk with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But I want to tell you, Peter, in answer to your question, we have not given up, and furthermore, we will never give up. We will never give up on the things that need to happen to make all of our lives better. When people came out and voted in the election, they voted for change. And it wasn't airy, fairy, pie in the sky. People were very specific. They talked about a change in terms of housing provision, change in terms of runaway skyrocketing rents, change in terms of the health system itself. And this is pre-COVID-19, waiting lists and trolley counts, that all of that had to come to an end. A change in terms of families and workers having enough to live a decent life, not extravagance, but to live a life where you don't worry week in, week out about another bill landing and your domestic budget getting busted. Change too in terms of pension provision and how we respect the contribution of our workers when they hit the age of 65, giving the option to retire an estate pension at that stage. People are also clear, certainly, and I spoke to and more importantly listened to hundreds, thousands of people up and down the land. And they were very, very clear that they wanted Sinn Féin not to be a vehicle of protest, but to be the vehicle to deliver that change. And they wanted us in government. And what's happened since then, and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael make no secret of the fact that they have done everything that they can to keep us out. So to understand their framework document and their new relationship, you have to understand that the real politics behind this isn't about bringing change, it's about stopping change. And we're not going to let that go without putting up a very strong challenge on it. We've been talking to all of the other parties, as you all know. We've done good work with other parties who actually believe in the kind of change that people want. And in terms of stopping Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, well, that's down to all of us. Of course, for us, we have challenged them. We will continue to do that. We'll continue to build alliances with others. I really hope that none of the other parties who are genuine and who with us, I believe, can deliver a real government for change, I hope that none of them agree to become the third leg to the stool of the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government. Because, listen, let's face it, Matt, who on earth believes that actually Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together will become this government that delivers on things that they don't believe in, no matter the rhetoric? By the way, that in times of plenty, they refuse to do. It's not that it wasn't suggested to them. It's not that a lot of these things are new ideas. They're necessary changes. They refuse to do them. I don't think they've changed their view. And I think their real goal is to keep power between them, particularly Sinn Féin. We have a battle on our hands, folks. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. We absolutely have not given up on the government for change. And we will continue to work for that, to work with others for that, to advocate for that. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael want to keep us out. Let me tell you, they're not going to be able to keep us out forever in the medium term, because change is coming and we're determined to deliver it. And of course, for us to be successful ultimately in that, we need people to keep faith and to keep hope and to know that the change that we all talked about is not only necessary, but it's absolutely deliverable.
We'll come back to that in a few minutes. I wanted to go to Michelle, because Michelle, you're in an executive, you're in government under what are difficult circumstances, because it's a five-party coalition, an enforced coalition under the Good Friday Agreement in many respects. But on top of the challenges that that brings, you're also dealt with the consequences a lot of decisions that are actually made in Westminster. And we've had a number of questions. One here from Barry, who's saying, after reading yesterday's Sunday Times article on Boris Johnson and the British Cabinet's approach to this pandemic, Barry wants to know what your view is on the British government's approach to date. And he also asked, does it make the case for greater All-Ireland alignment to make the decisions here on this island as opposed to being actually born with the responsibility of some of those dubious decisions, it has to be said, that have been taken in Downing Street since this crisis emerged?
Well, what an article that was written on Sunday. I mean, I think that exposed an awful lot for people, and it made grim reading. And I think that once we get through this crisis, there'll be a lot of questions to be answered in terms of the British government's approach. Not only were they out of line with the World Health Organization's approach, the European Centre for Disease Control's approach, they didn't even learn good practice from other countries that have been through this in advance of us. And I think that, I came out from very early on to say that the British government were too slow to act. I was criticised in the media for doing so, you know, for breaking unity in the executive. But this was about saving people's lives, and you couldn't be silent. You don't get elected. We certainly don't get elected just for the sake of it. We get elected to make a difference and actually to fight for people. And I think that, you know, it has proven over the course of recent weeks that, you know, now collectively the executive is now, you know, on the same page in terms of where we need to be. But I think that what the article demonstrated at the weekend was that the cabinet in London were far too slow. And I think that, you know, drives home a message to people again in the north that, you know, we're very much limited in the executive in terms of fiscal powers, being able to do things to support our people. We're very much limited insofar as that, you know, we have five parties and an executive, and that's challenging at the best of times. Just not least because we all have different takes and things. We'll have unity of purpose across many areas, but most and a lot of times it's quite challenging. But to be facing a crisis like this that none of us have ever been through before, to have our systems tied to what was happening in Britain didn't reflect the fact that we live in an island, didn't reflect that as an island nation we had an advantage immediately. And those things weren't reflected in those early days. We had to fight tooth and nail to get a change of position in the executive. And I'm very glad that we did that because that was obviously the right thing to do for our people. But like, whenever you look at how we've come through this, and, you know, as I said, there'll be a whole analysis on the other side of this. But it makes sense that we would do our modelling on an all-island basis. It makes sense that whenever schools are closed in Donegal, they're also closed in Derry. You know, it makes sense that whenever we're taking measures in one part of the island, we're doing it in the other part. These are just common sense things, and we have to chart our way through this and the exit strategy. It has to reflect the fact that we are an island, and it has to reflect that we need to make these changes lock, stock and barrel. We need to make them in tandem. And I think that certainly for our part, Sinn Féin will fight really, really hard to make sure that that's the case. We now have a memorandum of understanding across the island. The two health ministers have signed that, and that means that we're looking to share all island modelling. We're looking at procurement for PPE. You know, we're looking at these things. So I'm glad that progress has been made. But it just makes sense, you know, to anybody. It makes sense to protect our people, to save lives. Working together across the island is the way we should have been conducting ourselves from the very, very outset of this.
I have a very short question here for you, Michelle, that just came in from Dara in Derry, and he's asking, what's your message for young people as we approach the summer months? So as a young person myself, I'm very keen to hear the answer to this one, I have to say.
Yeah, it's like Lachlan the Mara, me being a young person too. So I would say to Dara, none of us are immune. None of us are going to escape this. I think that we all have to follow the public health advice. I think that I have to say, I think young people understand it as well. I think they've been great. People all have been following the advice. People get it. It's so serious. You know, it's such a worrying time for us all. So to all the young people out there, keep being great and keep doing what you're doing, because what you're doing is working. We're saving lives. And I think that, you know, all of us are being challenged right now. All of us are being asked to do things we don't normally do. And we're going to have a new norm probably at the other side of this. But we all have ways to get in touch, you know, online, Facebook, we're all Zooming, we're all doing all sorts of things. So keep in touch with people, keep in touch with your mates and your friends and do all of that. But just keep doing what you're doing, because we're going to save lives if we do it.
Well said. So, Pearce, lots of questions coming in, and Mary Lou might touch on these later on. You know, I suppose the post-COVID scenario, and this fits into what governance looks like, what society looks like, what our economy looks like after all of this. So I'm going to just go through a couple of these to give you a sense of them. So David asks, my question is, when can you and your team start to take the reins and start rebuilding our society? I'm very scared of what's going to happen after this crisis financially for all workers, as it's us that have to pay all this money back through our taxes, which are already too high. There's loads of questions in that vein. And Adrian asks, how can we ensure that this crisis isn't followed by the imposition of austerity, as it was the case after the banking crisis? I'm worried that this is what will happen. Aoife says she works in retail. For years, she's been struggling to get by on low pay. Now she's told she's an essential worker. What would Sinn Féin do after this crisis to address the low pay situation that many workers find themselves on? And Niall asks, should healthcare, childcare and elder care be provided for as public services after this crisis? And what can we do to make this happen? So there's loads more, but it gives you a sense that people are asking the questions now. You know, what's going to happen after all this? And are we going to see the type of changes that are quite clear?
Yeah, and they're the conversations that we need to be having, while our focus and the immediate term needs to be about the virus, keeping people safe, saving lives, as Michelle outlined. But we also need to be planning on the other side of this. And, you know, it didn't take a crisis. It didn't take a pandemic for us to argue, as we've done for many, many years, that we need to look after the basic things in society. We need to look after each other. We need to look after low-paid workers. We need to make sure that our healthcare is fit for purpose and doesn't just respond to how deep your pockets are. And we need to make sure that, you know, families and workers are given a breakthrough universal. That means public childcare instead of childcare that costs, you know, the second and dearest in the world. So we've argued for that. Not only did we argue for that, but we set out a roadmap, a plan that was costed and how we can bring that about. Today, Matt, given where we're at, given the fact that, you know, in effect, we've taken over the private hospitals, although at a cost, and there's another scale there for a different session, maybe, in terms of that deal. But given the fact that we're now paying the wages of all our childcare workers, there is a real opportunity on the other side here to actually recreate the type of society that we want to believe in, we want to live in, and that Sinn Féin believes in. And, you know, we hear from government about that this crisis has probably changed people's values, or we need to reimagine how we look after our elderly or how we look after our frontline workers. For Sinn Féin, it's always been that way.
Mary Lou, as I mentioned, probably thousands at this stage of messages of goodwill, but you're back to work today. I know you've been speaking to us all as TDs. You've been doing a lot of media interviews. But what's your message for this coming week?
My message is this, Matt, to people, is to keep it steady. Mind yourselves, mind each other. To our young people in particular, who I think in some cases have been unfairly singled out. I think our young people are amazing. And I think the vast, vast majority understand how high the stakes are here. So just to reiterate, stay physically apart, but by God, stay connected. And let's look out for each other. Let's not lose our composure, but let's understand how deep and serious this public health emergency is. And that's the first thing to get through this. But then let's be filled with hope, because everything now that the establishment told us couldn't be done, shouldn't be done, wouldn't be done, are the very things that I think people across society now accept have to be done. So we can't hobble on with the kind of confused, expensive health system that we have. And I mean, let's face it, our heroes on the front line have been telling us that for how long? For as long as I can remember. We can't continue with an economy that shuts people out or that keeps so many people in such insecure, low-paid employment that really they can't live a full life and establish, you know, themselves and have a steady and a good quality of life. Housing. We're not going through another 5 years or 4 years like we had with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael for the last one. I just want to say that very, very directly, where we had a whole generation of people locked out of home ownership, where you have people living in their mother's box room. We know all of these stories because we hear them all of the time, where you had people, their rent skyrocketing again and again and being told, well, no, we can't freeze rents. Well, guess what, folks? Yes, we can. And they did, because it had to be done. So I see this as a time actually where we can remould the country that we live in, and we can actually begin to the process of wearing down that border on our island and getting a coherence that's not about political point scoring or I was right and you were wrong or any of that stuff, but that's about saying to everyone, do you know what? We can do better. Look at what we can create. I actually believe, I would go so far, Matt, as to say, I think we have a responsibility now. I mean, we have coming through an experience that is not just once in a generation, it's once in a century. The Spanish flu, that pandemic is the last time. Back in 1918, by the way, the same year of the historic Sinn Féin election, way back then was the last time that you had a similar experience. And look at how the world changed in the decade that followed then. We can change things. So my main message, I suppose, is around hope and around change and not to give up. We were asked earlier on, I think by Bernie, or maybe it was Peter, to say, you know, are you giving up? I'm never giving up on this. I believe that we can change our country, our island, our communities for the better. And we can all live in an island, without sounding cliche, that we're really, really proud of, and that we can have confidence in that when things get tough, that we've harnessed our talent and our capacities to make sure that we can mind each other and to ensure that each of our kids and all of those young people get to live their best life. I am determined. I know we can do it. I absolutely know it. And can I just say this as well, Matt, because I was talking to our TDs and our senators, and I'm going to be talking to our MLAs and all the rest. Now, I don't say this in a sense of arrogance at all, but I want to tell you this. Piers Doherty should be the Minister for Finance. There, I've said it. Eoin Óibrín should be the Minister for Housing. Louise O'Reilly, Health, and. I could go on. And you know what really, really bothers Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? It's not that we're not, Sinn Féin isn't fit for government. It's that we are very fit for government, that we're ready, and that we know that the kind of change that people now palpably are saying that we need and we want, that can be delivered. So framework document, my eye. Change is what it's all about, and it still remains in the short and medium term about getting that government for change so that we can actually have the chance, the historic chance, to put the plans in action and to show people how different government can be, how different government can feel, and how different the results can be for people out on the ground. And so I remain hopeful, Matt.
Thank you, Mary Lou, and I think that's a great way to finish up the night. As I mentioned earlier on, apologies for some of the connection problems we had. I want to just thank our social media team who put all of this together. If you have any ideas in terms of what type of shows or discussions you'd like to see coming on the Sinn Féin platforms, let us know. I want to thank actually all of the Sinn Féin staff from all of our offices and from all of our institutions, because they've been working, most of them from home, obviously, but they've been working flat out, helping us to deal with all the myriad of queries we've been getting. Of course, we all want to again send solidarity and a sincere thanks to everybody who's on the front line within our healthcare system, especially to nurses, to doctors, to home health carers, to all of those people who are playing whatever role in our hospitals and surgeries and those centres that Mary Lou mentioned earlier on, and also to all those other workers, some of whom are actually going into work and taking home less than the COVID payment, believe it or not. But their jobs are hugely important because they're the people who are ensuring that we can put food on our tables or we can collect our medicines or whatever the case may be. So thank you to all of those. Thanks